This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org.
Today on CityCast Denver, downtown Denver is in transition, and where some are squeezing the last drops out of the old, others just want to tear it down and build something new. So we're talking about both, the ongoing debate around the possible demolition of El Chapultepec, and the surprise layoffs at the Brown Palace, plus your favorite grocery stores in the city. Today is Tuesday, March 19th. I'm Paul Caroli, and here's what Denver's talking about. Hey, good morning, everybody. Bree is here. Hey, Bree.
Hey, Paul.
And we're joined this morning by Westward editor Patty Calhoun. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
I had a Denver celebrity sighting this weekend. Very exciting.
I want to know what your level of celebrity is.
I'm wondering how you two are going to gauge this, because I was very excited. When I saw her, I was at Hearth in Rhino. This is a new bakery.
Oh.
One of my favorite bakery coffee shops, I think. They're like crushing it. They just took over one of the coffee shops near my house, this same group.
Which coffee shop? Sorry. By your house.
No, it's okay. It's technically within Denver city limits. People might be interested. In Virginia Village, it used to be called Unravel, and now it's called Tablon.
Okay.
Which
I'll
is
ask,
very
we
fun.
Can talk more about this off mic. I'm always curious.
But anyway, at this fancy coffee shop, none other than Donna Rodriguez, Cuspidy the chef. Yeah. Apparently she's in there all the time.
I think I would immediately recognize her.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
And her voice.
And her energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah. She is a celebrity.
Okay, I can give you one.
Bring it on.
Flying back from Chicago last night, Josh Blue.
The comedian. Mm-hmm. Of
course. We've had him on the show. Love
yeah,
him.
He's great.
We'll put links to both their episodes in the show notes. Those two are awesome. Anyway, let's get to the news. So Patty's here to join us to talk about a couple of great Westward stories in the last week or so. First is kind of an ongoing conversation, El Chapultepec. This is Denver's most historic jazz club. We briefly discussed last week, right as the news was breaking, that Kenneth Monfort of the Monfort Development Company and the Monfort family, which owns the Rockies, they've announced plans to demolish the El Chapultepec building and replace it with some kind of new bar, restaurant thing. Outdoor patio. I mean, this is Lodo. This is Party Central. I think we can all
to make
imagine.
It look like the rest of the block.
Yeah. But Patty, you wrote in, let us know you had some feelings after you heard us talking about this. What are you thinking?
Well, it was interesting. I got tipped off to that about 4 days before I wrote my story. So four days before it happened. And even though that hasn't been a jazz club since December 2020, and even though it was completely ripped up by the incredible Valente Corleone, who somehow got the lease on it.
Speaking
just a
of
bad
Denver celebrities.
Actor.
What was that? Surprised me. It's a large real estate company that was
right
leasing to him, but
right
yeah.
It was, and the owner, I mean the
so
landlord
strange.
That did it, they know their stuff, so that was very strange. But he ripped out supporting posts. He it was just structurally, yes, he did ruin it.
Can I tell you something he did?
Yes.
Because I saw a picture of something he did in there. He was in there for like 6 months.
That's right.
And he painted a painting of himself looking at another version of himself.
Oh, yeah. I
on
was
the
there.
Wall. You saw this painting?
I don't think we saw it. I think Stefan told us about
it. The absurdity
of
this. Yeah. Oh, my
I went to an event there that Stefan had hosted. And when, so in November 2022, Monfort Companies bought the building. Mm-hmm. From the landlord who had leased it to Valente Corleone. And initially they said, and the giggling grizzly next door too. And initially they said, we want to preserve it. They couldn't preserve it as El Chapultepec Jazz Club because the daughters of Jerry Krantz, the founder, essentially, didn't want to revive the jazz club as it was. So they didn't sell the name. The building was what sold, but the building has El Chapultepec on it. It has signs. So by restoring the building, you could keep that theory. You could keep the feeling of it. You knew what was once on that corner. And Stefan Brackett, as you know, he wanted to make it a hub for community music.
This is Stefan Brackett, member of Flowbots, longtime champion of the arts.
Started the 87 Foundation.
Because El Chapultepec Quebec had been there 87 years when it operated as a club. Then they changed the name to One Denver, but still the idea was to push it. The changing the name shows just how far the family had gone from the building itself. But you guys seem to think it was fine to knock down the building. I would argue that you can, and the building, no question, it's a mess. It cannot be completely restored, but you could save the two outside walls. Wouldn't be easy, but Historic Denver certainly says you could do it. They did it at 17th on East 17th, you know, for the tavern uptown. They saved those walls. So you could save the walls and build behind it. And let's not forget, there are historic buildings in that 1900 block of Market. In the complex, Matty Silk's, the notorious brothel, that's now part of the whiskey bar. So this group initially wanted to save it, or so they said.
I was like, did they? That was my skepticism, was what were they going into
with this? I think they did,
because
they were really talking about pushing the music community and keeping the concept. Had to be hard when the family goes and starts the Elgin-Pulchbeck Lounge at Dazzle, but they still wanted to, but then it just kind of became easy. 15 months later, it's in such bad shape. A lot of people aren't going to argue if you knock it down.
Yeah.
Some people like me are, because I don't think trading it for basically an outdoor patio, which is what they're talking about, makes a lot of sense. And in fact, Anna Diaz, one of the daughters of Jerry Krantz, I was talking to her at this event at Dazzle last week, and she said, no, that's a really bad idea in that part of town, because what happens to that outdoor patio after 2 a.m.?
I don't know. It wouldn't be the only outdoor patio over there.
Yeah,
those are awfully
the street.
Popular, especially on game day.
Right, so why do we need another one?
More demand. More fans.
They can go inside.
They
and
could.
In fact, they are going to put an outdoor patio on the roof of the Giggling Grizzly, which is, they're keeping that building, which also is old and probably more historic. And then their idea is a sky deck and then a outdoor patio below.
Yeah, interesting. Bree, since we talked about it, we learned that the folks from Historic Denver have been talking to the Monforts a little bit about some kind of a compromise.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of what Patty's talking about, is like saving this, what is left of the structure, and building it. I guess it would be considered adaptive reuse. Not really. It's kind of just like you're saying, saving two walls. To preserve that corner, I think. And Patty, I appreciated your piece. We'll put a link in the show notes. I think you did a great job of explaining where it had come from, what Larimer looked like 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, the context that's gone, and what El Chapultepec provided, which was that it was what was left.
It was the destination place too.
Yes.
40 years ago.
And I do want to say, like, I went on one of my first dates with my husband at El Chapultepec. I guess my argument, it's not even an argument as much as like, I wasn't surprised that the Monforts were like, oh, structurally unsound. Do I want us to save it? Yes. Do I see a realistic experience happening there with it? Maybe not so much. But there are some great examples. I was just looking at the Denver Infill blog at 11th and Cherokee. There's this little section of these. They were like tiny stores. There was like the Denver Pizza Company.
Pizza Company. There was like a salad shop in there for a while.
Yeah, and there was like a hair salon. They're saving that front and building a giant building behind it. So it is a thing that developers can do.
Patty, something I learned in your piece was it's actually kind of odd that El Chapultepec, it was not already historic, like doesn't already have those sorts of protections. Because you said there's something called a Lodo Historic District.
Right. So what happened in the late 80s is there was a lower downtown historic district set up. And people get very confused about where Lodo is. But basically, everything southeast or south, let's just say, of 20th, over to Union Station, but not Union Station. It wasn't part of it. Over to the alley before Larimer Square, because both Union Station and Larimer Square didn't want to be part of this. But it is a historic district, but certain buildings were exempted as non-contributing, partly because maybe they just weren't in great shape. They'd been changed too much. So Giggling Grizzly is part of it. There's no way that could be torn down. Probably.
But El Chapultepec is
probably.
Not.
Right.
How curious. What bizarre.
But it's still part of the district. And I have to say, what's interesting is since that lower downtown historic district was formed, the rules have changed, and now cultural history has been added as one of the reasons something can be landmarked. And if there's ever been a place that is culturally important, It's Elche Pultepec.
It's like the prime example of what a cultural
Why shouldn't people be able to, as they're going to Coors Field, so the spanky newish, it is 20 years old now, it's going to be 30 years old soon, the spanky newish ballpark, why shouldn't they be able to see the walls of what once held an internationally famous jazz club? Why not?
That block, yeah, it doesn't feel historic at all. I mean, there's giant structures put on the fronts of those buildings. It's just like El Chapultepec is like the last holdout. It's the last standing thing. And maybe that's all the more reason to hold on to it.
And you could still build, you know, a bar, which is what they're doing with many of these, and a party place with Dierks Bentley. And it is weird that Maddie Silks is in the middle of the Dierks Bentley saloon empire.
You can barely see it.
You can barely see it, but it's still there.
It is.
I love thinking about someday, like 30 years from now, someone having this conversation about the Dierks Bentley whiskey house.
We have that they want to save it.
This important period where 20-year-olds were going and getting super drunk. That was a culturally important tradition in this era of
Denver. That basically makes all of Glendale a historic district.
Oh, yeah, I wish we had done that a while ago, Patty, when we could have saved all those cool 80s bars.
One more point on this. I feel like there's just something here about like the value of the El Chapultepec brand and what the Monforts are doing here. Because something you said, Patty, about the family that used to own the bar carrying on the name, they own the brand still, and they have this place at Dazzle in DCPA where they have like the El Chapultepec Lounge, right? Is that what it's called?
Free music in the lounge on weekends.
So that's a new enterprise they're trying to start up, and they're trying to use this brand that has value. So if I was the Monforts and I was thinking about potential adaptive reuse or like redevelopment or like carrying on the tradition of El Chapultepec some way, I don't know if I would want to use the name, the brand, and undercut the family in that way. Like at this point, I might be trying to separate it just out of some kind of respect, just for the tradition.
I don't think respect is the issue here. I mean, if they wanted that, they could have. I don't know why the family really didn't want to sell and didn't want to have a jazz club, but I think they thought when they stopped running it, it was going to be done. But they care enough about the legacy to do Dazzle. They're doing a whole legacy foundation trying to gather El Chapultepec memories. We'll see how that goes. But I think with the Monforts, yeah, I think they'd probably at this point be happy not to have the signs to boot, but they're not. They know that is a losing fight. Hmm. So they're going to keep them, but it's confusing. It's confusing to people, and we know that.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high-quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a 2-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The Brown Palace, Denver's second oldest hotel, is laying off its last doorman and bell staff, according to a new report from Westward, some of whom have been working there for decades, as the hotel's current owner looks to cut costs. Patty, in y'all's article about this, you portrayed the Brown Palace as like really being down on the skids right now. What makes you say that?
Having been there recently, I will say this is another story we were tipped off to by the people being laid off. They laid off 10 people who between them had 140 years of experience. Mm. The hotel is only 132 years old, so they had more experience than the hotel. It's always been known for elegance and service and accommodating guests. And obviously, if you ditch the bellman and the doorman who always would greet you and know you. That's going to change. It's going to a third party. Now, of course, it's a third party that's running the Brown Palace now. It's owned by a Texas consortium that has hired a Connecticut hotel operating company. So there's nothing local in the ownership or the management of the Brown Palace now. But I toured it during COVID when they were doing some renovation. People were very concerned about a lot of the historic things that were getting changed. Even the Beatles suite is changed.
Where they stayed before they played at Red Rocks back in 1964.
The Dwight Eisenhower suite. I mean, some of them looked okay, but they were concerned that there wasn't a lot of, they weren't paying attention to the history. But I've been to the Ship Tavern a lot, and they changed out the tables, and they look a little more like Denny's. And so what the Brown Palace really had going for it was you went there for the history. Service. You went there for the service, the history.
Bree, what did this mean to you, hearing that they're getting rid of their last bellman and valets?
This, I mean, this is about the service aspect. This is part of what brought people to stay there. Like, other than the history, it's the living history in the people that are working there, and that they're providing something that 130 years ago was the norm. We went to Las Vegas a couple years ago, and we walked into Planet Hollywood, into our hotel, and nary a person. You just check into a machine and you get your information and then you move on. There's no person even greets you. And I know this feels like a lost art in some capacity, but this is what made the Brown Palace so spectacular, was that the folks that were there to serve you and with expertise. And that to me is what Denver is really losing, the human aspect of something so special. The Brown Palace is going to be like any other hotel now. Like, why would I spend more? It's more expensive. Why would I spend more as an out-of-towner to stay there if it's just like a Holiday Inn with some older fixtures?
I mean, the bellmen, the doormen, they were trained in giving people advice.
Yes.
Denver history, downtown history, restaurants, recommendations. And let's just say how they cut back.
What a dirty
move. The layoff, no severance. They gave these guys 2 weeks' notice. They can reapply to become valets.
So
and we're
rude.
Talking car parking valets. Some of these guys don't have their driver's licenses, you know, because they're in their 60s. They don't want to drive. That's not their job, to be a valet.
Patty, let's talk about the downtown aspect of this conversation, because Brown Palace, you know, that's one of the gems we got in downtown Denver. That's one of the things people want to see when they come and visit. How does this play into this ongoing narrative, this thing people talk about when they talk about downtown being a toilet bowl?
Well, A, I don't talk about downtown being a toilet bowl, but
I think
I hear
that was
people,
Representative Matt Sober.
I hear people who rarely go downtown saying that. I think they're inaccurate. I think the Brown Palace is much more indicative of what's going on around the country. People don't value service the same way. And they bought this place before the Texas company bought it in, I think, 2018. So it was before the pandemic. They just wanted to make money off this historic building. For 61 years, the Brown Palace was a 4-star mobile-rated hotel. That's incredible. They lost them the first year under this new owner. That's not me. That's not downtown being a toilet. That is a company that came in and has done a really bad job of running the place. So I don't think you can use either of these as indicative of what's happening downtown. People are running things well. Those streets are jammed on the weekends.
So it is really, I just want to say, you said people don't value service anymore. Corporations don't value service anymore. And I think that's what we're really seeing, because that experience, someone who's been to the Brown Palace before will notice that immediately.
But they've already been writing us.
I bet.
The people who are so sad.
Well, I think there is something else changing, though. I think it is about people and customers, too. Because what Patty's saying is the company wants to cut costs.
Right.
And they think they can do that and maintain business. They think people will come. You know, I think there's maybe a different perspective on this. You could say if they're not paying these bellmen who have had these, you know, who have a lot of experience and are very expensive, and maybe they don't, that most customers aren't expecting that kind of service, maybe they can charge less. Maybe they can make a slightly less magical experience available for more people.
Go to one of the other 20 hotels downtown.
That's what I would also argue.
I mean, you know,
people want to go to the Oxford and they want to go to the Brown because they want that historic, unusual experience. Otherwise, they could go to the Sheraton
Literally
or the Hyatt.
Anywhere else.
And I think indicative of just how bad this Brown Palace move was is some people quit in solidarity.
That's amazing.
People who were not laid off.
That is a really bad sign for the business. All right. Well, Brie, you mentioned grocery stores. We got one last thing for you all today. After a quick break, we're going to come back and we're going to answer your comments and questions about our conversation about America's worst grocery stores. All right, and we're back. We always want to hear from you, our brilliant and hilarious listeners, about the things you care about. So every Tuesday, we share a comment or answer one of your questions that's come up on the CityCast Denver hotline. Brie, this time we've got a couple of responses to our conversation on Friday about a Westword article. So, Patty, I'm sure you know all about this, that was pointing out a survey that showed that 4 of the 10 worst grocery stores in America are here in the Denver metro area. Patty, any thoughts on that before we get into these comments?
Well, you know, there are so many listicles out there that generally you just have to ignore because they're pulling random facts. But this was based on Google reviews and Google studies. And it's not like there haven't been other stories about problems at these grocery stores. So we were very excited about it because everyone has their own opinions about some of these stores.
Yes, you realize how people feel very strongly about their grocery store experience.
Let's get into these voicemails. There's some great stuff in here. This one comes from Alex.
Hey, CityCast. This is Alex in Aurora. I wanted to quickly mention, you guys mentioned on your episode on Friday that Aurora does not have a lot of great grocery stores. Most of them are chains. There's a great new one called Lucky Stars Grocery at 690 Peoria. That's Peoria in the north part of Del Mar Circle. They're incredible. And just a quick customer service anecdote. They were exactly that kind of story where I was hunting through my wallet to get the last 60 cents to pay for a purchase. And it was like $20 or something. And they said, oh, 60 cents, you're good with the 20. And they're great people there. They're very friendly. And it's a new store. And they have great reviews, as they should. So definitely give them a shout out. They are exactly the kind of little neighborhood grocery that carries what people need. And I think people are going to really love them if they give them a try.
I love that. Lucky Great. Stars?
Lucky Stars Family Market at 690 Peoria Street in Aurora.
Cool. Yeah. Good place to know about.
Great tip. I after our conversation, Brie, I was telling you this earlier, but I think I went to 4 different grocery stores this weekend, including the first time I've ever been to a Mi Puebla market. Do you know this one, Patty? I was talking to the chef Manny Bure a couple weeks ago. He recommended the Mi Puebla in Thornton as the best place to get like Mexican spices. He was exactly on point. That might be the best grocery store I've ever been to. It's beautiful.
It's a great store. Those are great stores.
All right, let's go on to our next one.
Hey, it's Ian Silveri from the Get More Smarter podcast here in Lakewood. I know we don't technically qualify as Denver, but I wanted to call the I Love My Grocery Store hotline and provide you with a different perspective. I love my grocery corner here in the burbs. We have, within like 1.5 square mile, a Sprouts, a Whole Foods, and a King Supers, the Belmar King Supers specifically. And I often hit all 3 of them on the weekends when I'm prepping the big meal for the week for the kiddo. And it is really nice to have all 3. And it shows that we need to do some more work on food deserts in places like where I used to live on 16th and Logan in Cap Hill, where the we used to call it the Not-So-Safeway, was my primary grocery store as well. So just wanted to drop you guys a line. Love the show. Bye.
This is my also trifecta. I drive to Belmar to go to the grocery store because the King Supers on Alameda and Wadsworth is so awesome. And I'm with Ian. Like, if I need something else that I know Whole Foods does better, then I'll go there. You can drive down the street to Sprouts. And he's correct. We have sort of like an overwhelming amount in one area and we're very lucky.
Isn't that funny how that happens?
It is wild.
They concentrate like that. Reminds me of something our regular guest Joshua Emerson said about Quick Trip and gas stations, how they decide where to go in just based on how many cars drive past. I wonder if grocery store chains have some similar calculations based on like how many rooftops or how many people live in. Anyway, Patty, what do you think about grocery store concentrations or do you have a favorite?
Oh, I've gone to so many over the years. So I live in Northwest Denver and 26th and Federal, which was a horrible Safeway I moved into that area. And I remember once I was in line and some guy just got like 1 can of soup and 20 packets of lube. I'm like, and use food stamps. Whoa, that's interesting.
We all make choices.
Now it is very gentrified, and it has all the aisles are named for streets in Denver.
I noticed that.
Which is one of the most insanely stupid things imaginable. I noticed like you get diapers on Colfax, which is not what I would normally equate with Colfax. But it's nicer, but I kind of miss how weird it was before. Down by my mother, they have very nice suburban grocery stores, but the Old King Super's down at, where actually a guy got fired because he was chasing out shoplifters. But the people there are so nice, and older King Supers, and they just are so great to their shoppers. So it is service. It makes a difference.
It totally
service
makes a difference.
Service and quality.
I want to shout out a couple more. Al Arash International Market, that's like my main source for Middle Eastern food. They have the best olives I've had in the Denver metro area, and it's right across the street from H Mart, which is also down there on Parker Road. Ooh. So that's another little grocery corner, which is awesome.
I miss Alfalfa's in Cherry Creek. That was my favorite.
Where was Alfalfa's?
It's in the shopping center that's west of Whole Foods, kind of. There's like a Christie Sports in there. It's a weird two-story strip mall. Huh. And there used to be an Alfalfa's in there. It was great. But and I also like the Ideal Market in Cap Hill at like 11th.
I like it
Ogden.
Too. I heard they're changing it back.
Oh, to Whole Foods?
I heard they're changing it back to Whole Foods.
I love that grocery store.
Yeah, I think they're getting rid of the Ideal Market branding and they're going back to Whole Foods. That's just a rumor I heard. I haven't confirmed that. I don't know that. But
speaking of that area, I just want to share a little thought from a regular listener, Mark Barnhouse, who's a historian and writer of all things Denver. And he mentioned something that I said on the show, which is I referred to the Downing King Supers in Cap Hill as Queen Supers. And I kind of just said it in passing. And he said, he wrote to me and he said, as for whether it's acceptable to call the 9th and Kuroda King Supers Queen Supers, as a gay man who used to shop there several times a week in the 1990s when I lived at 9th and Lafayette, I think it's okay to still keep using that term, and I still do. Just think of it as celebrating the fact that it's a heavily patronized, or used to be before we were more dispersed, by the LGBTQ+ community. And I'm glad I just wanted to point that out because I said it sort of in passing, not thinking that maybe people don't know why it was called that colloquially, but it's because the neighborhood was very queer, still is queer, but was a epicenter for queer life and queer community for a long time. And that was reflected in the grocery store in a really wonderful way. And I still pop in there from time to time because I love that grocery store. Similar reasons. Feels good. Good service. I see a lot of the same people.
It is a good one.
It's a great store.
I don't recommend trying to park in that lot on
bad
the weekend
parking.
Mornings. Really tight. Really tough.
They do have really that lot tough. Across the street too, if you don't know.
Oh, do they?
Uh-huh. They have an extra. That. They have an auxiliary lot as well.
Well, this was so much fun. Patty, thanks so much for coming back.
My pleasure.
And talking to us. See you next time.
Thanks, guys.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell the Brown Palace's operator, HEI Hotels and Resorts, about us. Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you then.
I want you to know that I wasn't coughing in the mornings until I walked in here.